Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Webtoon Wednesday, and today I'm going to be talking about a strip called Muted with the creator of the strip, Miranda Munt. So, Miranda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I always like to ask people when they come on for the first time, sort of about their background with comics. Like, how did you discover them? Did you grow up reading them? Your secret origin, so to speak.
yeah, for sure. I guess it's like, how old am I? I'm 28 now. So back when I was like 14 or so, there was this website. I can't remember exactly what it's called. It was like basically just like a collection, a database of all these online comics where you could search for like, I want to read a drama, and like we had it there. And so I think the two big ones that I read at the time were called like Vampire Phantasm and Garnet. But anyway, so just reading, like, I guess since I was 14, but as I grew up, just drawing them with my friends, I was like, you know what, like, I can do more than just comics. Like, I can do animation. And I'm like, I'm gonna make actual animated stories, because like, I really like between, you know, manga and anime, I prefer anime because I like seeing things move and I like hearing how things sound, and I feel like it's a whole other level of stuff. So I went to school for animation, and then and I had a lot of fun and it was great, and but it's obviously a lot of work. And so when I came back, I did some freelancing, but was never actually able to get into animation because, like, part of me was like, well, like, I could, but then I'd be drawing for, like, other people, and I still really want to tell, like, my own stories. And with comics, I just find that it's easier, well, it's not easier, I don't know by any means, but, you know, to sort of, like, you know, get in there. Like, you can do it yourself as opposed to, like, with animation, you, like, need voices and, like, a whole team. So it's just, you can get in there and start telling your stories that way. So, yeah.
So when you first kind of discovered comics, you right away migrated toward the digital, it sounds like. Was it always sort of the manga or the sort of slice of life stories, not necessarily the traditional Western comics, which tend to be more focused on superheroes and those type of stories?
No, I've always been more of like a kind of fantasy kind of person. With my wife and I, we met in eighth grade, and like since then we'd always been like making characters and like making stories together and like talking about making books and stuff. So we actually, it was like in 2016, we had a comic together that was called Siren on Smack Cheese. But it was about mermaids, and it was in another world where most of our stuff is based, sort of a parallel to Earth called Freya. So it was like elves and all sort of fantasy creatures. So it's never really been about slice of life by any means. It's always been some level of fantasy.
Got it. But never really interested in the more traditional superhero sort of stuff?
No, I did a freelance thing where I did a sort of sci-fi superhero comic with someone. And that was a lot of fun, but it wasn't like the kind of thing that I would normally do. I would definitely say that I'm more based towards, like you said, the sort of, fantasy kind of stuff, not traditional Western stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all about what speaks to you and what kind of stories interest you. I mean, you kind of write what you know it, to that extent.
For sure.
Well, you mentioned some of your previous work. Has most of it been in the digital realm, or have you had some things traditionally published as well?
I actually have. I spent a few years after school as a freelance artist, but it was mostly for like children's books. And so like a few children's books were published. But as far as comics are concerned and stuff that I've made for myself, like it's always been digital. Like, it was actually just like last September. I was invited to this called like Raw Artists, And it was like the first time I'd ever actually really had my like stuff up and printed. Like I wasn't even really sure how to like print stuff. So I was like, oh, well, gee, I hope this goes well. So yeah.
That's cool. Do you still enjoy doing that where you're illustrating things that aren't, you know, it's not necessarily your story, or do you prefer more to kind of write your own stuff and then draw it?
I really enjoy writing. You know, like I said, we would write all these stories and stuff. And, like if someone had a story that I really like jive with, then I'd be more than happy to like draw it with them. But I think if given the option, I'd prefer to kind of write my own thing.
Yeah, I totally get that. Totally. I mean, and it's like if you're developing it with somebody, that's a little different too, rather than just coming to you with like a full completed script and then saying, okay, this happens in this panel, this happens in this panel. Then it's like you're not really getting to kind of exercise your creativity as a storyteller. I mean, you're still, you know, creating with art, but it's not kind of the same, right?
Right, exactly, 100%. And that's like how it was with like the sci-fi one, where he gave like the layout, like even like the panel layout, like how he wanted it set up, and would just like say specifically what he wanted in each panel, which is fine. Like it made my job super easy because he knew what he wanted, and so I'm like, here you go, here's what you want. But it does take out like a sort of a level of the creativity, and then in a sense, you know, but like working with my wife, like we're thinking about another one. It won't come out for like months now, but we've been planning, and it's just really fun to work, you know, with someone who understands like your sort of creative, like, you know, because we're on the same wavelength with a lot of stuff, so we can just like easily bounce ideas off of each other. And that's like a whole other layer of, I think, storytelling that's really fun too.
Yeah, and in no way am I diminishing artists who don't make up their own stories, because it's still incredibly hard and it still is creative. But when you start talking about doing things like that, that's where the misconception comes in, that anybody can draw and you're just a, you know, a pencil jockey or a, an art monkey or any of the other, you know, derogative terms, because people see that, okay, well, you're not making up the story. So, you know, you're just drawing. And in no way do I want to make light of artists who don't, you know, create their own stories. And oftentimes it's just a matter of, they don't have the opportunity yet. You know, there's very few artists I've talked to, especially ones working in traditional for the big two, who don't have ideas for stories of their own. They just haven't gotten the opportunities yet. So we don't want to say like we're diminishing and saying that if you're just illustrating a story that you're somehow not creative or you're doing less. It's just for your personal preference. You know, you just, it brings more out of you and brings more passion and brings more to the story if you're creating the narrative along with the illustrations.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, because I like to, when I work, it's sort of like, I guess, like on the fly, like changing things at the last minute. But yeah, 100%. I know it's not easy to get into that. And then also, like, writing is hard. It's hard to decide what to do. And like, I know, and even with my stuff, like I'm sure people don't 100% agree with how I write things, but I get to write how I want them. So that's what I'm going for.
Yeah. And that's the other advantage of both, you know, handling the writing duties and illustrating. If you get stuck on one or the other, you know, like maybe you don't know how to, you know, illustrate a particular scene between two characters or what have you, or how to lay it out or what the composition should be. You can move, well, I'm going to go and work on the actual story and the narrative, and vice versa, right? Like if you're stuck, I'm not sure how, I know what point C is and I know what point A is, but I'm just not sure how to get from point A to, like, I don't know what B should be. I don't know how to get from A to C. Let me go draw for a while and stretch different creative muscles and come back to it later. So you have that advantage as well.
Okay.
Well, let's shift gears here and talk specifically about the title that you have on Webtoon called Muted. Why don't you let our listeners know what the title's all about?
Well, it is like a summary of what it is. I mean, what the title itself is?
Maybe both.
Well, the story is about, it focuses on a witch named Camille Severin, who is now 21 and has to do this sort of ritual for her family that she's been expected to do basically the entire time. And it takes place in New Orleans, where there are 7 major witch families. As for the actual title, I can give you a sort of metaphor for what it means as far as what it actually means, because I have gotten that question a few times, like, why is it, what is it, what does that mean, why is it called that? It is actually sort of a spoiler, so I can tell you, because I also feel bad about, like, holding things like that, because I'm always paranoid that once people do learn about it, they're like, oh, well, that wasn't really worth the wait at all. But, that's not a secret. You just told us that from the beginning. Like, I'm sorry. I thought it would be exciting. But, so it's like, it's something that'll come up later. It's a thing. But you could say that it's also sort of a metaphor for how she, for most of her life, Camille has been, sort of like dulled and muted and not allowed to be herself. Until like now, and like the story is about her sort of like learning all these other things that she can be.
Yeah, you know, I didn't pick up on that when I read the episodes that are out so far, but now that you say that, of course, it makes perfect sense. And it's a great word to use to describe the way that Camille has been sort of sheltered and to a lesser extent controlled. You wouldn't say silenced necessarily, because it's not that overt, you know, it's kind of subtle what's been done to her. She, you know, lost her family early, and she's incorporated into this witch family that she was, you know, a part of, but it's being raised by her aunt, and to a lesser extent, as I said, controlled. So it makes a lot of sense. So as you were conceiving the idea, was that something that you, the title, was it something you had right away? Was it something you came to later? Like, how did you come up with choosing that title?
It came in pretty early on, because the metaphor I just explained, as much as it makes sense, I literally did make that up for this interview. But like, as for what it actually means, that came in early on, because that when it happened is a thing that had been basically planned the entire time. The alternate title that had been in the ether, which is the Tumblr URL for the blog that I don't post on as much as I should, but was Witch's Blood, just because like she's in a family of blood witches, and also that sounds kind of cool. But I felt Muted had a sort of more simplicity and mystery to it that I like.
Yeah, so we've mentioned Camille. She's the main character of the story, the one that whose journey it seems like we're gonna follow, and I imagine it's going to be a coming of age story about her to some extent. Could you give us a little more insight into Camille, and then some of the other main characters that we've been introduced so far?
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. So Camille, she lost her mother and her sister when she was 8. And she also herself nearly died in the accident, because she got a lot of burns from it. And then had to move in with her aunt and her cousin, who is extremely athlete, is extremely like hardcore traditionalist as far as the values that have been established for the Severn family, which is basically be as powerful and influential as possible. Like, do whatever you can to raise the name of the family by means of like influence and power. So in this world, only women have magic. So their idea is to like, okay, well, we'll just take some random rich dudes and marry them and get all their money and power, and then just continue to do our own thing, basically. And so like Athalie is like very hardcore, like we need to do, like focus on this and do this whole situation. And then Aveline, she was an only child, whereas this is not as important, but most, basically in the Severn family, all girls are born in sets of twins. Like Camille had a twin, and Ashley, or Camille's mother, they were twins. But Aveline's sister was actually stillborn. So she's one of the few that doesn't actually have a twin sibling. And so she raised up alone, and then so then having Camille there was sort of a chance to, like, for her to be like, oh yeah, and be super excited to be, you know, have a sister essentially. But so she does her best, you know, be a sister and be, you know, a good force for Camille to lean on and wants to take care of her. But she's also very afraid of her mother, so that kind of stops her from probably getting in between the two of them as much as she'd want to. You'll see in times when Ashley is yelling, Aveline sort of withdraws into herself and then will comfort Camille afterwards, because she doesn't want to just like yell and like tell her mother to be quiet for fear of it coming onto her. And then Sylvia is technically Ashley's younger cousin, so she is, that would make her and Camille second cousins, I believe that's what I found out. And so she's 10 years older than Camille, and she believes very heavily in what Camille's mother had been trying to do before she died, where she was trying to connect the other families and sort of break down the barriers of all these traditions and just sort of like, you know, like make everything a little bit more copacetic and not as like super rigid. And living out in the swamp where the greenhouse is, she is given the opportunity to be more vocal and argumentative against what Ashley is doing, and is very protective of Camille herself.
Yeah, and you really have created a really rich world, especially, you know, so quickly. I think there's only, what, 13 or 14 episodes, is that right? And not only in terms of kind of the magic and the background of New Orleans, which, you know, always has this mystique to it, but in the tapestry of relationships that you've established so quickly with these different families and, you know, I don't know if we're going to use the term coven for these witch families, but, you know, these different groups of witches that seem to be isolated, as you mentioned, and Camille's mother was trying to change that, as you said. And so they're very insular, but then we also see there are greater familial connections that go back further that tie them together, despite the fact that everyone is sort of separated from each other right now. So it's a very, it seems like an intricate plot in terms of like a lot of characters, a lot of relationships, a lot of different moving pieces. Is it a challenge to keep track of everything? Do you have like one of those big giant bulletin boards with the little strings going from person to person on your wall?
No, I should. That sounds amazing. My wall's covered in just like a lot of really random kind of posters right now, which I love looking at, but absolutely have nothing to do with my work. but thank you. But it's not, I wouldn't, like, it's not hard to keep track of the plot necessarily. I guess my biggest concern is I want to introduce all these characters, but then I'm afraid of introducing too many and then leaving them sort of undeveloped. I don't want to introduce a character and then have people be like, well, why are they even there? Like, why did this character exist if they were just going to kind of come in for 2 minutes and then leave again? It's just like, where to me, it's just like, I just want, you know, I just want to show you some more fancy people. So I guess like with my biggest worry is jumping too quickly from place to place, because like I don't want to settle too heavily in one spot and like have nothing happen, but also don't want to feel rushed. So I guess that's sort of a balance that I try to toe when Camille is going and exploring all of these places, that we aren't there for no reason essentially, and that we get enough information before she's like, okay, well, I'm gonna go home now, and then we start the next day.
Yeah, it's a really interesting problem, and one that I haven't really talked to with a previous Webtoon creator that we've had on before. But it's interesting because, you know, when you talk about traditional medium here, right, you have your page count and you only have so much real estate. to tell the story you want to tell. With Webtoon, you have your deadline and you've got to be able to meet that. But in terms of how many panels, you know, you have a lot more freedom. You can go as, you know, as long as you want within reason, or as short as you want. Some strips tend to be a little shorter, but again, it's that idea of being able to deliver consistently on your deadline, you know, week after week. And there has to be the temptation as a storyteller to want to do maybe too much, because you want to get the spotlight on, you know, but this is a great story, I'm excited to tell it. So there's that push as well to want to get a, you know, you get about wanting to get your story out there. But the danger in going too fast is that you may skip over somebody or not give them what you want. Plus, if you know, you want to be consistent with the length of the strip, and you have to meet your deadline.
I think pacing, the thing about how I try to end things is obviously the panel number is consistent, but there is a fine line, because you can't please everyone, you know, no matter what you do. So you bind yourself either, like, because like in episode 13, for example, I would consider that more of a transitional chapter where it was like, okay, well, if we're getting from point A to point B, and like we're doing stuff, but it's not like a lot of stuff. And like people are just like, what? Like, this was really short or nothing really happened or whatever, even though it was still like an important chapter. Whereas in like chapter 14, like a lot of stuff happens. And like, you know, it ends on a cliffhanger essentially, because, you know, you have to end at some point and you want to end at the most interesting point possible. And then people just get mad because it's a cliffhanger. So I guess it's, you know, it's hard. You just try to figure out what is the most important thing you can do. My minimum is 40 panels. I usually end up being like 45 panels. Like, what is the most I can tell in a not super cramped way, but most interesting way in like 45 panels?
Yeah, that always has to be the challenge, and then knowing weekly deadline. I don't know how you guys do it, honestly.
I'll
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Like, I had a recent sort of issue, because like I mentioned how I went to school for animation. It was like Monday through Friday, like 9 to 4, like drawing, but it was like, I guess it was like at an angled sort of desk, and I guess I had better posture, but like a couple weeks ago, it was like for the first time where I was just like, wow, my hand hurts. And so I had to stop like drawing for like a whole week, and I was just like, oh, that's an actual danger. Like, this is my job now. I need to take better care of myself.
Yeah, exactly. To ask you, how much of yourself is in Camille being dark?
I think with when I originally designed her, I think she was more like me than she is now, because I feel, you know, you write from what you know. And so, sorry, dogs are scampering. You write from what you know. So, originally she kind of, you know, so started out more like me basically. But as things go on, is like, for me as a person, I don't really react very outwardly to a lot of things, and which, you know, I think is fine as far as being a cool, level-headed person, but for a protagonist, that can be pretty boring. And so the active part of when I was writing her was like making her more vocal and more visibly affected by things that were happening. Like, the way that she snaps and yells at the Dupree family when she, like, when they show up, is like, she's rightfully upset, obviously, because she's traumatized by the concept of this fire, but it is not a way that I would have reacted. I would have just gotten like really quiet, and I probably would have left, but I wouldn't have like yelled. And, like, but it's like, but if she had just left quietly, like what I would have done, then that wouldn't have been as interesting to read.
Yeah, that's interesting to me that she started out much more like you, and then I guess at some point she took on a life of her own. Mm-hmm. Right? You discovered that, oh wait, she doesn't react like me. She is kind of her own person. At that point, did you feel like you had kind of gotten a handle on it, like an understanding of who she was as a character?
Yeah, I think so. When you write with something, you learn more and more and develop more and more. I find, like, with characters I've had in the past, like, they all sort of, they're a shell, essentially. And then as you throw them into various situations, the more they bounce between them, the more I find that I don't have to think as much about how they react. I'm like, oh, this is what she does. This is just how it is. This is how she is now. I don't have to, like, sit there and be like, well, if I were in her shoes, it's sort of like, you know, kind of coming through like, yeah, this is her natural state of being, essentially.
Yeah, this is, I know who she is. It's almost like she's a real person. Mm-hmm. And I know she would react this way in this situation, basically.
Yes.
And we did mention that you're really still at the beginning of the story, and you've really got a lot of mysteries brewing, right? Like, what are the links between the families? What really happened with Camille's parents? What happened in Camille's ritual? We don't know the answer to that yet.
Yeah.
And even the name Muted is a mystery that you mentioned. So do you enjoy kind of teasing out those answers to the readers? And has the reaction from readers been so far, like, are they enjoying these mysteries, or are they really clamoring for answers?
I think it's sort of a combination of the two. It's kind of funny watching is, like, for example, like half the comments, well, not half. I guess half is egregious, but a lot of the comments will just be people, regardless of the context, being like, this is what I think happened with the fire. This is who I think started the fire. And I'm like, I'm not going to answer you. Like, I can't tell you that. But like with other things, as far as mysteries are concerned, like when in chapter 14, when it was just like, when Harriet's like, yeah, I'm your grandmother, so you're half LaRue. It's funny because, like, that is a particular, it was sort of a mystery because it wasn't fully stated. However, it was essentially stated because I mentioned it so many times. So it was interesting to see, like, half the comments would be like, yeah, we already knew that. That's cool. And, like, but the other people would be like, what? And so it's like, it just, you know, people read and process things differently. So it's just fun to see the very different ways that people respond. I think the most, like, important thing for me as far as how people react isn't so much how they respond to the mystery, which is, like I said, it's important because it's all part of the story, that even though I have to try very hard not to tell anyone about it, the most exciting thing for me to see is how people react to new characters, is like if they respond the way that, like, I would hope they responded, like with her grandmother. I was just like, oh, I hope people really like her, like, she's really sweet, like, you know, hope people like her or whatever. And then people are like, I want her to be my grandma. I'm like, yeah, you do, that's exactly what I wanted you to do. And stuff like that. So,
well, that's got to be gratifying when the readers really get exactly the idea that you're going for there.
For sure.
There's really been a lot of themes that have jumped out in the forefront too, right as the story is beginning, particularly this idea of responsibility, right? Like these mm-hmm. witches, they turn 21, they have to do this ritual, become part of the family. It's almost like they need to prove their worth and become like a contributing, you know, a valued member of the family. Like what can you do for the family, family above yourself? So this idea of familial responsibility, personal responsibility, was that something that was kind of forefront in your mind of something you wanted to explore when you started coming up with the idea for the story, or did that idea happen, that theme happen more organically?
I think sort of a combination, because I think one thing to note, like, it's pretty much only the Severn family that really puts this level of pressure on their girls. It's sort of a thing, like, for example, like, whenever I talk to my mom about anything, when I explain what I'm doing with my life and you know, it almost always follows with a comment of where she's like, well, I was expected to get married. I was expected to have children. It was like, I couldn't do anything else. I was expected to do these things. And like, for me, from my perspective, being able to grow up in this day and age, it's just like, well, I mean, you had a choice. Like, you didn't have to do any of those things. Like, obviously, thank you for giving birth to me. However, you didn't have to do any of those things. So it's like, it's sort of that mindset that Camille and most of the girls in the Servant family have, where it's just like, this is how life is. This is something that I have to do. And I've been told to do this basically the entire time. And so then Camille goes, you know, to the orchard, and meets the LaRue family. And she's just like, oh, no one else does this. And she's realizing, you know, there's so many other ways that she can live her life. And it's not just a closed book, essentially, where it's all been written like she'd thought.
Yeah, which brings me to the next kind of theme that I wanted to mention. And it's, you know, super relatable, especially for younger readers, you know, anyone who's in high school, still trying to sort of find their place in the world. And, you know, like you were just talking about, where do I belong? It seems like Camille has that, right? Like her family, her aunt maybe has this idea of putting her in this box and this is a role you're going to play. But Camille, like a lot of us at different times in our life, seems sort of lost. Like she doesn't know where she fits in. She doesn't know if she's doing the right thing. She seems like she has some things about herself that haven't necessarily been revealed. Maybe even some, to some extent, that she hasn't been willing to say out loud. Like maybe she suspects these aspects of herself that she's not even ready to face. You know, she's not even ready to say, okay, this is who I am, and show that to the world. And so because of that, she's almost hiding from herself. And it seems like that maybe is the biggest theme and the biggest idea at the heart of the story. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it is a big thing, the idea of her learning and accepting parts of herself as she, you know, thinks about it, because, you know, she's been told what to be this whole time. And this month alone, not alone, but this month away from the same sort of structure has given her a second to breathe and think about it. But it is largely based in fear, both of what people will think of her and just like admitting to herself, like even just like with as far as being like half LaRue, it's like, you know, because like her hair is red or whatever, and like her mom giving her plants all the time when she was a kid, and just like things like hints where, if she's like in the Discover version, she even mentions it like, oh, I kind of knew that this was part of me, but I just ignored it. It's like she was like so determined to be quote unquote normal, is that she just sort of like shut it out and, you know, didn't want to react to it. And so, well, so now it's like, well, now you have no choice but to pay attention to it and think about it. And so, and then as she goes along, is able to feel the immense amount of relief from admitting this other half of her, which of course, yes, the obvious metaphor, the other part that she's denied the whole time that she's a lesbian, is another thing that she's like chosen to ignore. Cause like, you know, she's like, you're going to get a husband. And she's like, well, that makes me uncomfortable. I'm going to try not to think about that for as much as possible. And like, but now being able to like sort of step back and be like, oh, these parts of me that I've kept muted for so long, I suppose I should actually think about and wonder if there's actually a way out of it.
Yeah, that's interesting, you know, especially being that June is Pride Month. That did stand out to me when she said that. Like, I did notice in the story when somebody mentioned her getting married and she immediately stepped back from that. But so far to this point in the story, it's not something that's really been at the forefront. But I love that idea, and again, you know, bringing some of your, you know, your own personality to the character. But I love that idea, because when you think about it in terms of sort of where we are now in the world with, you know, more diversity and more acceptance, you know, we obviously still have further to go, but it's better now than it was in the past, right? When you think of things that are old fashioned and traditional, and maybe some of the things people believed out of ignorance, which is certainly, an idea of which is certainly one of those things. So it would make sense to me in my mind that this society of witches, that might be something that's kind of taboo. Someone who's, lesbian wouldn't be as accepted. So I imagine that's a challenge, and something that's going to bring drama to the story, and something that Camille is going to have to face and deal with.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, because you'll see in later chapters, again, with Mira, because she'll come back and just like her sort of taking Camille by the hand, like, I'm going to lead you like this way so you can like explore and see that there's more to life. And she finds that the rest of the world is like, because like, with like, obviously there's still prejudice in the world in general, but like the biggest fear, I think, when it comes to coming out is how your family will receive you. And so her biggest thing about being quiet is, not wanting like to have to deal with that kind of rejection. And where, as she meets new people and realizes that like, oh, like even though like these people aren't my family, they still accept me in every part that I am, and I don't have to pretend to be something around them. They'll just be around me. And so a sort of a found family trope, if you will, to go along with the glaring metaphor for homophobia that is her aunt.
Right.
And so, yeah, so it's sort of like going out and exploring and finding that freedom.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to seeing the story that I'm interested in, that aspect of it, play out in the world that you've created, with, the witches and the overbearing aunt and her grandmother, and because her grandmother's of that world as well, but seems, yes, to be much more open-minded. So I'm really curious to see the path and the journey that Camille goes on in terms of that. But I wanted to talk to you about your art style that you use for Muted. But before we get into the specifics of the style, can you take us through your process? Like, once you've scripted or plotted out a particular episode, like, how does it break down in terms of how you start laying it out visually? Do you go thumbnails to sketches to color, or what's your process like there?
Mm-hmm. So I write out, I was actually talking to some other webtoon creators. We were like sharing how we wrote out scripts. And when I write out a script for a chapter, it's actually kind of like almost writing a novel chapter. Like, I write it like with quotes and like if I were writing a book. And like, just because that's how it's easier for me to process. And then then I send it to my editor and she's like, cool, looks good. And then I start to sketch it, which is usually in like two super long files where then I write everything out, and then usually we'll end up changing things from the script, because like once it's drawn, then I realize like some things fit better, or I can just like rearrange some things as I go. And then I get the layout of the script verified, and then from there I do a second sketch that is tidier. And then I ink everything, and then I send all of my lines to my friend Sydney, to base color, which is just like the flat colors, like just one shade of red, one shade peach for the skin or whatever. And then she'll send all of that back to me, and then I will add in all of the backgrounds and effects and the shading.
Wow, it sounds like such a long and involved process. So much work when you're doing it all yourself. So, who are some of the influences, or the biggest artistic influences on the strip, and how would you yourself, as the artist, describe the style that you're using in Muted?
I think as far as artistic influences is like, I actually have I guess a bad memory is the best way to say it. Whereas, like, I see art that I think is really beautiful, and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And then I forget about it immediately. I follow them, and so I don't sit and analyze art probably as much as I should. Like, there's a lot of artists that I, like, really admire, and I, like, love their work, but I don't, like, study art and pick out what exactly I like about their stuff. I think the most where I learn is when I actually do commissions and I actually have to, like, hold up someone's what they want me to draw versus how I have to draw it. I'm like, okay, well, how does this translate? And I find that, like, the way that they use colors and the references they give me, that I learn a lot through that process more than anything. But then as far as what my style is, in the past, not so much anymore. In the past, a lot of people compared it to Avatar The Last Airbender or Korra. But that's not as much anymore, I think, since my line style has gotten a lot thicker. So I guess I would call it, how would I say, a series of happy accidents, because it is the style that I use to draw both effectively and quickly, and it's not, my art style is actually pretty, like, inconsistent, like, even panel to panel with Camille, like, the braids in her hair. Not that I want to specifically draw people's attention to this, but, like, her hair, like, there's a different, like, number of braids, like, panel to panel, is because I don't feel like it's important to be consistent, obviously, but there are some things that I understand that people probably aren't going to notice so long as it looks good. So I have to use my time effectively, because it's like I had to do all this stuff in a week. So it's sort of just, like, doing what I can to, like, make the colors look nice and make, you know, the faces look nice, but, like, all the little details and stuff, you know, it's just whatever looks good in the moment.
And that's interesting. So I guess your love of kind of the Eastern style of comics, manga, basically anime, that comes through, but it's not, there's nobody that you particularly say, okay, I like what they do, or I like what they do, so I'm going to kind of incorporate that. It's almost like what works for you and your story. And like you said, if it looks good, you're going to run with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Basically.
Is there a particular part of the process that you enjoy more, or is it all kind of the same for you?
I really like doing the final shading and coloring, because I don't do super, like, finished backgrounds. Like, I don't, I'm not good with little details, but, like, I like doing the sort of, like, coloring and lighting effects. Like, this will come up later. Obviously, it's not out, but, like, in chapters 18 through 20, it's sort of, like, at night in the swamp, and then, like, also there's, like, the sort of party situation where, so it's, like, a lot of different really cool, like, nighttime colors. So I like getting to experiment with sort of, like, painting those backgrounds and sort of a darker colors on the characters to make it, like, more blue and kind of nighttimey.
Is there anything, you know, as we've mentioned several times, there's we're just at the beginning of the story, haven't gotten into the nitty-gritty yet, and we also don't want to spoil, because we want all you listeners to get out there and read it for yourselves. But is there anything that is coming up that has you particularly excited that you can't wait for people to read and discover?
Yes. There's a lot of things. I actually am pretty excited for just about every single chapter that I do. Every time I do a chapter, I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, people are going to like this one. And then I do the next one. I'm like, oh, yeah, people are going to like this one. But, like, just because, like, there's a lot of stuff that happens, but as far as the ending of season one is concerned, I'm excited to see how that all culminates together and see how people react, I suppose, in either way. I know I have a feeling that the reaction will be a strong one.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit. I don't want to keep you too much longer. I know you have deadlines, but I did want to ask about kind of the reader reaction. Did it, you know, we haven't had that many episodes, but did it take off right away from the first few episodes, or has it been building a little bit slower? Like, what's the reaction been like?
Well, I suppose I don't know what, like, the average is, like, for me compared to others, but I do know that between the Discover version that I originally did and this version, like the audience is, like, easily three times the size. So the reaction, I think, has been absolutely incredible, and I feel like it's growing. Like, my editor said that there was a small spike between last week and this week. So I think as things go on, like, it started like pretty strong and I was super excited about it, but I think as things go on and people realize more like what the plot is about and what's actually kind of more going to happen, I think it'll just keep, well, hopefully continue to build.
Well, that's great. Has there been a particular reaction or reader interaction that has stood out to you in your mind?
I've been really excited about how interested people are in the world. I have a Discord server where I talk to some people, and we recently made like a personality quiz for like what family would you be in kind of thing, and just sort of like a sort of interactive thing, because people are interested, you know, in how the covens are built, and like, so I want to tell them as much as I can without revealing too much, obviously, but that was just like a fun little way for people to just sort of get involved. And it's just also really exciting to see people who relate to Camille in particular, since she is the protagonist and she is not me, but she is, you know, close to my heart. So it's important to me that people like her. So I'm excited when people do.
Yeah. And you did mention before about talking to some other Webtoon creators, and it seems to be a very supportive community and a really tight-knit community. So you've really been enjoying kind of being a part and sort of being able to grow as a creator by asking advice and interacting with your fellow Webtoon creators.
Yeah, for sure. Because like, I didn't really use Twitter before this, but I started to use it more because I saw that a lot of, you know, creators were on there, and it was a good way to talk to them. And then me and the creator of Air's Game, we were like, we should make a Discord server. And so we got like one that is like 15 to 20 different Webtoon creators where we talk. And it's nice. It's nice, you know, to, you know, we all share the same sort of thing where it's, we're all going through the same thing, but creating something so personal to ourselves, because everyone's creating like their own story. So we're coworkers that just aren't working on the same thing. So
that's a good way to put it. Yeah. I like that.
So, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun getting to know them and just see their own processes. And yeah, I hopefully will get to meet them in person someday.
Yeah, I've several Webtoon creators that have been on have talked about their experiences when they've gone to a comic convention, mm-hmm. and gotten to meet some of their fellow Webtoon creators. And by all accounts, it's a wonderful experience. So I look forward to you getting a chance to do that yourself.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Well, before we let you go, is there a particular place online, if anybody wants to follow your work, know when new episodes come out, if you have other projects, where's the best place to get all that information?
The best place is probably either Twitter or Instagram. With Instagram, it's just my first and last name together in all one word, Miranda Munt. And then for Twitter, it's flipped with Munt_Miranda because I messed up and made a different Twitter account and I can't get back into it to get that name back.
No.
So maybe one day I'll figure that out, but for now it's Munt_Miranda.
Well, great. I'll put links to Miranda's social media in the show notes, everybody. So if you want to follow her, you can go and find it there. Well, I really want to thank you for joining me, Miranda. I'm really enjoying the strip, and I'm looking forward to seeing where the story goes. As we close out here, anything else that you want to share with your listener or our listeners and your readers?
Just thank you, you know, you and to everyone else so much for reading. Like, everyone's response and support has been way more than I could have ever dreamed. And I'm just excited for everyone to continue chugging along on the ride with me and hope you continue to enjoy it. So thank you very much.
It was my pleasure.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.